It is Monday, a holiday for some, but never for us who toil away in the legislature.
Hey, drivers, that she is.
You are in the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Welcome. Please turn off your cell phone, PDAs, anything that makes noise, and we will get started. Our first bill is, I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3600A. Ms. Richardson, why don't you tell us what that does? Well, Representative Buckley comes forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3600A permits school district to request a waiver from the Department of Education and allows the district to administer a grade 10 assessment from a contractor other than the state-selected contractor. Requires the department to grant a waiver for the 08-09 school year only if the district had a contract to administer the grade 10 assessment for the previous school year, and the contractor meets the same criteria as the state-selected contractor. Permits the State Board of Education to adopt rules to waive the grade 10 assessment for specific groups of students. It declares an emergency would take effect upon passage.
Okie dokie. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Representative Peter Buckley, representing South Jackson County in the legislature, chair of the House Education Committee. This bill comes about from a bill that was passed at the end of session, you might recall, in June, that took away the SIM-CAM statute. And there was many different provisions of that bill. It had provisions about the School for Blind, School for the Deaf. It was a large bill that we all worked really, really hard on. There was an amendment placed in to have every 10th grade student in the state of Oregon do a nationally normed assessment test. And when I first read the amendment, I had a lot of confusion about it, and I called the superintendent of the Ashland School District, and I said, you know, I've got this amendment here, and I'll send it down to you, and, you know, give me a call back and tell me what you think. And the first six words she said when she picked up the phone were words I can't repeat in public, because she was so upset by the idea that she was going to lose another academic day from her calendar, and how stressed that her school district feels about it. But the more we delved into this idea, talking with the proponents of the amendment, the House Committee held hearings in September and October on this, we learned from the different districts that are using this 10th grade assessment, this nationally normed test, that they're actually having great results with it. They're actually identifying students who are not on the academic track for higher education, not on the track to get into the AP classes, and they're identifying those students in the fall of their 10th grade year, and they're able to go to those students and their families and say, look, you are capable of doing college level work. You are capable of succeeding in higher education. This is something that you should think about. And if you do choose to go on this path, here are the steps you would need to take. It's turned out to be a great tool for the Beaverton School District. It's probably they had the most success for it consistently, and other school districts around the state. The problem arises in that there are two major testing products, the ACT tests and the College Boards, the SAT tests. And we have districts in the state that are using one or the other. The bill passed last session basically tells the department to contract with one of those testing entities and have that be the one 10th grade assessment test that every school district in the state would have to offer to their 10th grade students. Again, best of intentions, a very good tool for districts to use, but when you're asking a district that has put in years of their own resources and their own training into a program based on one of the tests, and then mandating from Salem that next year they're going to have to change that, our committee felt that without the discussion and input and buy-in from those districts, this might not be a program that would be very well accepted by those districts, might not work. So a great deal of discussion went into how do we address this. There's great validity in having a department contract with one testing agency in terms of the price that a testing agency could offer for all 10th grade students, etc. And there's also great validity of thinking if we did have one test, that'd be easy to make a comparison on. So we came back to the idea of, well, can we at least give a year's worth of time? And really that's all this bill does. It gives a year's worth of time for the 2008-2009 school year for the districts who are using the testing product that the department does not choose. I hope I'm being clear there. For instance, if the district decides or the department decides to contract with the ACT product, then the districts who are using the SAT product will still be able to offer that SAT product in the 2008-2009 school year. It gives them a year to see what's coming down the line and to make an adjustment or to come back to the legislature and to the state board and say, here's what we think about what this program's all about. Here's the strengths and weaknesses of going to a statewide test or not. So it buys us time. It still provides funding for the districts that come on board and use the testing product that the department chooses, but allows that little bit of leeway for the districts that have invested their time and their resources in the other testing product to be able to continue to use that for a year. It gives us time for the OSBA, COSA, and the department to come in and give us their input about what we're doing here, making sure we're making the right step for the state. Thank you, Madam Chair. We're glad to answer any questions on the long and winding road we took to get here.
That was compressed into about a 24-hour period, if I recall correctly. Yes, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Buckley, I was just curious, when we did the kindergarten bill, we put it out to 09-10 just so there would be some more continuity because it could be late in 09 when the decision is made. Did you consider that?
Boy, I tried, Madam Chair, Senator Cruz. Boy, did I try.
Okay.
I really did try to make the effort to have this extended. In terms of negotiating with all parties involved, this was the timeline I could get agreement on.
I understand that. Okay. I mean, it does make some sense. So there's, I mean, this planning goes on well in advance of the events, so.
Madam Chair, Senator, it's my hope that we can address this early in 2009 session, at least have the discussion again so that the school districts know for the 2009-2010 school year what's coming down the pike.
Okay. Well, it's always our hope to resolve most things early in the session, but that doesn't always happen.
Oh, in this committee it does. Any questions? Senator Morse.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Does either the SAT or the ACT tests have any influence or bearing on institutions that grant AP credits?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, have influence on the institutions that grant AP credits? You mean in terms of the university system or?
Well, in terms of them moving on, having taken AP classes and then receiving AP credits, are there any thresholds on these tests that would influence granting the credits?
Thank you, Senator, Madam Chair, Senator Morse. These tests, 10th grade assessment product, as I understand them, do not, they can show that a student is capable of doing that work and put them on the track to get into the AP classes, but they do not in any way establish a credit for an AP class for a student.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. What I was driving at was the selection of one or the other, since mm-hmm. we're going to one. Would that influence any granting institutions?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, thank you for the clarification. The bill does, and the original amendment also did, put out specific criteria, and it does in Section 1, Sub 2, A, Line 14 and 15, it does talk about the identified students. Each test has to be able to identify students that were with the potential to excel in AP, advanced placement or other honors. So both tests have to have that capability.
Did that answer your question, Senator Morse?
No, thank you.
Okay, great. Anything else? Representative Buckley, thank you. As I indicated before the hearing started, your bill has a relating to education clause. So I just want to hold it because it's a nice relating clause in case we put something in there. And of course, you will be notified before I do anything like that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope you hold it gently.
I will hold it gently, coddle it very carefully like it's a diamond, and we'll make sure we get it out before our committee closes down on Wednesday. Thank you. Let's see. We've got Chuck Bennett, Ozzie Rose, and Matt Marquis, I think. Are you guys testifying? We don't have anybody signed up to testify. Do you want to testify? If you don't want to, you don't have to. Okay, good. Then
right decision.
A good decision. All right, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3600, and as I indicated, we're just going to hold that one over. We're still trying to resolve the Canyonville School District issue, and this might be our only vehicle. I know you guys moan in the back of the room, but I'm trying to do something to help these people. Okay. Did I close the public hearing on that? I did. Okay. We will open a public hearing on HJM 100. Ms. Richardson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 100 expresses support for all rural Oregonians and urges support for reauthorization and extension of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act of 2000.
Okay, great. We've got three people signed up, Commissioner Linda Madrell, Bill Cluding, and Deborah Maddy. If you don't know each other, you're about to. So come on up. And it seems to me this is a, as Yogi Berra would say, something like deja vu all over again. Because we had this sort of memorial last session, and I guess we'll just keep doing it until Congress listens. So who would like to go first?
They're all ears, I'm sure. Chair Walker, members of the committee, regards to Senator Morse. I'm here as the first vice president of the Association of Counties, and I'm also a Benton County Commissioner.
And your name?
Linda Modrell. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Look at my name tag. Yeah. I'm here today to urge your support for HJM 100, a memorial to the United States Congress expressing support of reauthorization of the Secure Rural Schools and Community Self-Determination Act of 2000, also known as the Federal Forest Payments. As county commissioners and judges from throughout the state of Oregon, we're all too familiar with the devastation that Oregonians face if this act is not reauthorized. The act expired September 30th, 2007, and without reauthorization, Oregon will be $260 million poorer on July 1st, 2008. The impact of this loss will be felt throughout the state and by state programs that we deliver, we, the county commissioners and county judges. We believe the extent of the devastation is understood by many members of this body, some of whom traveled to five southwestern Oregon counties last spring on a fact-finding trip. As a direct result of that trip, Speaker Mark Merkley created a House Committee on Rural Policy. That committee then toured five eastern Oregon counties last fall. The governor has recognized the dire impacts that will be experienced for our services throughout the state, such as public health, mental health, community corrections, criminal prosecution, juvenile services, and veterans services, just to name a handful. In addition, county assessment and taxation services will suffer, which means all taxing districts will be harmed. Beyond these state services, county sheriff's patrols are imperiled, and our county road systems, which play a critical role in the transportation system throughout the state, are degrading as we speak. In some counties, it's much worse than in others. And in my county, it's one of those. We haven't had enough road money for a long time without losing any. 740 counties around the nation have asked Congress for a multi-year extension so we can work at home to develop solutions to the loss of this federal money. Nevertheless, we are extremely disappointed to see Congress moving in a direction that breaks a 100-year trust with many federal land states in this country. These federal lands, and in Oregon, it's more than 50% of our land base, have provided goods and jobs for over 100 years. What these lands don't provide is property tax. The deal was shared revenue with local governments. But when there are no goods coming off the land or jobs being created as a result, there is no revenue coming into local coffers from shared revenue and many fewer dollars coming into state coffers from lost income taxes. We received a one-year extension of the federal forest money last year, and that money will run out in June 30th of 2008. Your continued support of the effort to reauthorize federal forest payments provides our congressional delegation with strong ammunition as they continue the fight at the federal level. We think that the one-year extension was helped by the resolution that the Oregon legislature passed. So we strongly urge you to pass HJM 100 and send it on to the Senate. On behalf of all Oregon counties represented by the signatures that are contained in this letter, we thank you for your consideration. Thanks so much.
We'll hear from everyone and then we'll ask questions. So would you like to go next? Deborah?
I'd be happy to. I'm Deborah Matty. I serve as the Associate Director for the OSU Extension Service, and I'm here today representing our county offices, county extension offices throughout the state. As I'm sure many of you are aware, Chairperson Walker and committee members, that extension is in every corner of the state, taking the university to the people and the communities. As a land-grant institution, it's been our pride and our mission for nearly 100 years. The partnership happens because of the federal government, the state government, and the county government working together to bring these services to the people. 16% of the extension budget currently comes from county funds. And in all but 16 of those counties, those are general fund dollars, which will be influenced and affected by the Secure Rural Schools Act. We have five counties who currently receive at least 50% of their operating budget from those funds. And I would say we have six county extension offices that are high risk for being reduced are eliminated because of the dependence of the county on these dollars. Now, this is not to say that the relationship between OSU and Extension and the county is in bad shape. The county commissioners are very supportive of our programs and want to keep us there, but the budgets will become so tight that they'll have to make very difficult decisions, and Extension being a non-mandated service to the committee, to the community, is one of those services that stand to take a hard hit. So we are urging you to support this resolution, and we're not standing still and ourselves. We're taking some action. Some of our counties are going for county service districts that will take them off the general fund and put them onto a service district taxing option. We are working closely with the Association of Oregon Counties to look at other options for expanding our services in new ways to build business models that let income come into the county operations. And we are also working closely with our county administrators, our county staff chairs, to help find new ways of finding funds to continue to deliver services to the county. So I have submitted a testimony that outlines the situation, what's at risk, and what we're currently doing. And if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer those. Okay. Thank you for your time today.
Great. Thank you. I've got some, but we'll wait until Mr. Kluding is concluded.
Thank you, Madam Chair Walker, committee. For the record, Bill Kluding, Carpenters and Joiners Council. Well, here we are again, Madam Chair, you said it. I personally hand-delivered to each of you in 2005, 2007, just exactly what was coming down the line, right to the dollar. What can we do about it? Let's look back what happened. Even with the county O&C funding, it literally tore the heart and guts out of these counties. It ruined their infrastructure. All the jobs that were lost, that was the backbone of our state's economy. Here we are, a state with more natural resources than most states, and here we are begging for money. I suggest that this committee and everybody in this room go to hearing room D at 5 o'clock and listen to the proposal that BLM has come up with. What that does, that promises to restore 90% of the O&C funding. But better yet, when you figure the equation of putting people back to work in this industry, 1 million board feet of timber creates 10 direct jobs. And when you look at the indirect jobs that this industry can build back, there's where your real money comes from. When you drive up through the Santa Yam Canyon and look what happened to that area, schools shut down. They're still putting plywood over windows. Look at the talent we lost. Look at the bright kids that were going to school, and all of a sudden their parents had no job. So that aced out any chance of going to college. What we could do here is to turn this thing around is go with the deal that BLM has. It will work. It will not violate any act of the Endangered Species Act. They have it all outlined, all drawn out. If this don't come about, these counties are going to be coming to you next session and asking for money to exist. And how are you going to turn down your people from your own counties? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Clitting. Let me ask you first, since you testified last, what is this committee hearing at 5 o'clock? And where the BLM is going to talk about a proposal?
Madam Chair, committee, it's rural policy, 5 o'clock.
Okay. All right. And is this the forest plan that they're going to talk about that the president has offered up?
Madam Chair, committee, the state forester, Marvin Brown, will be there. And then also the spokesman for the BLM will be there.
Okay. Well, thank you for sharing that with us. Let me ask you, Commissioner Madrell, and I appreciated your, it was a little bit of a sense of humor when you said to name a handful instead of to name a few. What most people say, because there are, it is a handful, it's a bucket full of programs that are going to be eliminated in all of these counties that get this money. Can you report to us what the governor's task force on federal forest payments and county services has done, where they're at to date? Do they have some ideas, some proposals? Are they going to present them soon? Do you know?
Well, the task force has split into a variety of groups, you know, transportation, revenue, a number of areas, human services, for example. And they're working hard. I think that something is going to be coming from them soon.
Okay. Okay, great.
But you know, we are, the counties, and I speak from a county who's relatively flush, as it were. But that's a temporary situation. This is a long-term problem, and for us to come to the legislature and ask for money when the state's revenue system is practically single source, and the counties and other local governments is practically single source, we have this broken system. It just doesn't make any sense. We need to fix the system. The federal forest payments just exposed the problem. It's a terrible problem that we have, but it also puts in sharp relief how and what kind of shape our system is in. It's not a balanced system. We don't have a portfolio to help us when things go down in one part of the portfolio and rise in the other. We need to fix the overall system.
Okay.
Otherwise, we're just constantly chasing this.
Yeah, I agree with you. Ms. Maddie, can you talk to me? I saw in your written testimony you mentioned something called a concept called open campus, and I think you alluded to that.
Yes.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes. One of the things that we're looking at as another way to expand opportunities is to bring more of the university to the community. And so the idea would be to partner usually with a community college and bring more university classes and coursework to the community. We have targeted two sites for sure as a pilot and would like to add a third to that. And so that would give us an opportunity to expand our revenue stream and wouldn't have to be so dependent then on county dollars to provide the support to provide extension. So it would be all the extension service that you're all used to having available to the counties, plus an opportunity to have additional degree-granting coursework in the community.
Well, I I just love the innovation here. I think that's great. Okay. Questions from the committee. Senator Metzger.
Just briefly, Mr. Cleeton, I appreciate your comments, and I do appreciate the resolution or the memorial actually indicates a couple of remedies, not only the county payments, but the underlying issue, which is managing the lands. I mean, clearly the federal government, and I realize there's been some court cases on this, conflicting and uncertain about how those lands have been managed. Certainly would be best if they were managed by our state Forest Practices Act and or at least managed under the original rules for managing these lands and providing the jobs, because it's not just a matter, as you pointed out very accurately, about how this might create opportunity to be self-sustaining, but it's the prospect of losing additional jobs when you don't have the revenues to attract families and to provide other services. So it's actually kind of a double-edged sword of if we don't solve this issue. And I know our delegation has worked exceptionally hard. It seems like there's been so many fits and starts, and you get hope and then you get setbacks and hope and setbacks, but at some point there's going to have to be some resolution on this. And while memorials are often kind of round canned back in Congress, I think anything that we can do, and certainly your advocacy on this, needs to be done to continue to press that button. I know in Senator Walker's home district, Senator Cruz, Douglas County and Lane counties are two of the biggest recipients of these funds and also have the lowest county tax bases, some of the lowest county tax bases. So the opportunities to make that up are very, very few and far between. So, but I appreciate your advocacy for the underlying issue, which is to be able to provide counties with self-sustaining opportunity, which we have lost.
Thank you. Anyone else? Senator Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just, for the record, the letter from the counties, four of the counties I represent do not have signatories on here. In the case of Curry County, they can no longer afford pens.
I heard they had pens, just no ink.
No ink, that could be too. And of course, Douglas, Jackson, and Josephine, and trust me, every commissioner in all these counties would have signed with. If given the opportunity, I'll tell Commissioner Robertson you did a fine job today. Doug's been at the front of this for a long, long time. So, and just one more thing. I mean, there's always a lot of confusion over BLM land, Forest Service land, and ONC land. And the confusion needs to end at some point in time. ONC is land that's been set aside for production, period, by the federal government for production of timber, period.
A working forest.
It's clear and explicit in the law, and for the federal government to lump everything in with everything else, which is basically what they've done at this point, is inexcusable. It truly is. You can take the ONC lands out of the mix, and we still have the majority of the federal lands in the state that we can manage for a multitude of uses. But, I think the only other option is tell the federal government that damn well better start paying taxes. If they're going to own our land and not let us use it, there's got to be compensation. This isn't welfare. This is a payment in lieu of the federal government living up to an obligation. I feel better now. Thank you.
You make a good career.
Madam Chair, if I may.
Yeah, Mr.
Senator Cruz,
please.
That's a very well put. I'll tell you one more proposal that's out there. Just divide the ONC lands right in half. The counties take half and give the other half to the federal government. We could restore our funding and create our jobs on just half of that land mass until the federal government hands off. That's our land. That's the other proposal that's out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kluding. You know, we're all going to have to rethink how we do business here, how we fund services in Oregon at state level and the county level because of this problem. And this came to me this morning because I have a bill to move the signature verification process for initiative petitions out of the county clerk's office into the Secretary of State's office. Well, I got the fiscal on it yesterday, and it was pretty high. And I said, but who's paying for it now? And the answer is the counties. So the counties are asked to administer the election system, the laws of the state of Oregon that we put in place. And I don't think that's fair in this situation because we've had more and more initiatives and ballot measures over the years. And so it's costing counties more and more money. They have to roll that money out and spend it on temporary staff. So that's an example of one way we could do it differently. The state could just take it over. So
unfunded mandate, sounds like to me.
Yeah. So I've got to try to convince a few people between now and Thursday that it's a good idea. thank you very much for coming. Your advocacy is so important to have you here testifying. I love extension programs. I know most of this, all of this committee loves extension. We've used their services. I know I've used their services many times. And you provide a valuable service to the community. Your advocacy as a county commissioner is to be commended. And Mr. Kluding, I always love hearing from you because you speak from the heart of the worker. So thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity.
All right, you're welcome. I've got a couple other folks who decided to testify, Mary Botkin and Amy Wilson. And David, do you want to come up too?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Mary Botkin with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. And Senator Cruz stole most of my testimony, but that's okay. Let me say a couple of things, kind of starting out here. I'm a native Oregonian. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure out how come the federal government thinks it's okay to subsidize tobacco farmers and sugar beet farmers and it's not okay to subsidize our timberland. You know, our timberland doesn't cause cancer, doesn't rot teeth. All it does is build homes for people to live in and create clean air. Now, I'm trying to figure out how come that's not okay. But it doesn't seem to be. I've worked on timber funding issues for the 20 years that I've been at AFSCME, and before that, you know, I know about timber. My dad was a logger. He was killed in the woods outside of Roseburg. You know, I know about timber, and I know about timber families, and the idea that the federal government is going to tell us how to manage our timberland in a way that bankrupts our state makes no sense to me. Now, when you talk about funding a year at a time, you're talking about elimination of the best and the brightest workers these counties have. This is not a career opportunity for a worker to think that their job's going to be funded for a year at a time. Why would you go to work in Coos County, other than the fact that it's beautiful down there, work in mental health, doing a very hard job, not knowing whether you're going to have a job from 1 year to the next? You're not going to buy a house, and you're not going to lay down very deep roots. And that destroys our communities. The day-to-day lifestyle of the workers in these counties that are being devastated by the loss of the timber funding is just outrageous. Madam Chair, we're going to lose over 200 jobs in your county alone. Those are family wage jobs with benefits and retirement. They're gone. In Coos County, I don't even know what we will replace those jobs with. In Josephine County, we contracted out all the mental health services, And, you know, be it good or be it bad, we sued. We got the jobs back with no money. And so this is more than just sort of a passing problem, and I don't need to tell you this, but it is systematically destroying our state and the rural nature of our state. Our union has supported every tax measure in every county, regardless of how obscure it was or how ridiculous the plan, in an effort to try to replace the funding base for everything we have, from mental health to public safety. Every time when a county has come to us and our members have come to us, we have supported those measures to try and pass them. Time and time again, the voters have turned them down. Just by way of background, remember that the Clinton administration, you know, nobody has to love them, but they at least did a timber summit, and they at least said, we're going to make a commitment. And in exchange for locking up your timberland, we're going to give you the money. I don't know exactly why they think they get to break that promise now, and why the federal government seems to think they get to break the promise after over 100 years. But they do, and I'm with Mr. Kluding. You know, they can have it one way or the other. They can have our trees standing up the way they want them and pay us, or they can give us our land back and we'll take some of the trees and lay them down for a while. But you know what? The other side of this is, they don't get to process them in Mississippi. They don't get to process our logs in Taiwan or Japan or China. They got to come to the table, and we got to process those logs here. I want to see our logs become 2x4s in our mills, because that's the way we rebuild those rural economies, is we create a lot of family wage jobs, not just a few. And we can do it through sustainable logging, and we can do it through good public policies. So having said all that, you know, obviously we're supporting this bill. It is a top priority for our union nationally and here in Oregon. We'll continue to work on it. We'll work with our brothers and sisters and other unions on this measure. But we're going to have one or the other. They've either got to give us our land back or give us the money that we would get for that land otherwise. And, you know, I don't know how we do it, but, you know, we've got to figure out a way to get control back of our property and our resources and create jobs for our people. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Barker.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Amy Wilson, and I'm speaking on behalf of SEIU Local 503, and we represent over 50,000 members in Oregon. And we represent county workers in Baker, Curry, Jackson, Josephine, Lynn, Marion, and Walla County. And so some of the counties that are the deepest hurt. SEIU has been actively working on this issue. We took a group of members back to D.C. to tell the frontline workers to tell the stories of what was actually happening. We had a librarian from Jackson County talking about the libraries closing and the services that seniors and children don't get to access when their county doesn't have a library. We had a member who talked from Baker County who talked about what it means to what it's going to look like when they have to ground up all their roads and because they can't maintain the asphalt, and they're going to have to turn them all to dirt. And then we had another worker.
Bring out the covered wagon.
Bring out the covered wagon. And we had, well, I mean, because how we understood it is that they were not, they weren't going to be able to maintain the pavement, so that was the most workable solution. Mm-hmm. And then the other person that came with us worked in juvenile justice, and one of the things that she had talked about was having 911 dispatchers that were going to be accountable for a 100-mile radius. We can all imagine what kind of emergency we don't want to be in when somebody's 100 miles away. And so we just appreciate the committee's attention to this critical issue. We think it's important that the legislature send a message to the federal government about how essential these federal dollars are to the health and safety of our rural counties. We want to continue to work with you and other elected leaders and stakeholders to reach a timely resolution to this crisis. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wilson. I was in Josephine County when
the county cut all the services and contracted out, and it was a pretty upsetting time for folks. And I've been in Jackson County and seen their beautiful, beautiful library sit vacant and still and quiet while children don't have a place to go and read. So this is an Armageddon. I mean, it's coming. It's coming. And if something doesn't happen, Oregonians are never going to see. I don't think we realize the tragedy of the situation. I don't think we realize how many services are going to be whacked because counties can't afford to pay for it. And you're exactly right. David?
Can I just add something? In the House, I suggested that rather than sending this to Congress, we should hand-deliver it with about 10,000 Oregonians. And I'm not convinced we still shouldn't do that.
We all don't have real ID here in Oregon, so we won't be able to board the plane to get there, but we could go by car.
Go by wagon train.
Yeah, I think, you know, actually,
that'd be a fun trip.
The federal government does so many crazy, dumb things. Real ID is one of them. But, yeah, we could do that. We could get a wagon train, grind up our roads, and get a wagon train and head back east. Find that fascinating. So do you have some other idea, Mr. Williams?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, David Williams with the Oregon School Boards Association, and just to add our voice to the chorus here, we're very excited to see HJM 100 finding its way through the system. We did not take 10,000. However, just a sneak week and a half ago, we did have board members from 12 districts around the state in Washington, D.C., talking to each member of our congressional delegation, and this was the issue we led with. We had some other issues we're dealing with, like No Child Left Behind, but this was, for Oregon, this was our lead and our talking point with our delegation about the need here. And of course, to remind everyone, for education, roughly $30 million a year, $60 million a biennium, comes from these important funds to our school system. And it's not isolated because of the vagaries of our funding formula. It is not isolated to our forest counties, but redistributed statewide. So this would be a $30 or $60 million cut to our education system statewide. And I can tell you, it was a very powerful point when I've got Bobby Regan, co-chair of the Portland School Board, talking to Congressman Earl Blumenauer about the importance of extending this this very important act for all of her brothers and sisters around the state of Oregon and those counties need it. The need, to put it in perspective, it's about 2 days a year of school, 4 days a biennium that this money funds in our system, or about, to put it in perspective, another issue we're all dealing with right now, is about halfway, a little more than halfway there to funding full-day kindergarten in the state as well.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up kindergarten.
To put it in that perspective.
Well, I was just, as you were talking about it, I'm thinking, you know, all of us, there was a proposal to bind us to fund kindergarten next session, and it would be irresponsible of us, given what the counties are facing and what our own budgets are facing. So I'm glad you brought that up.
And to add to that, and it for us, it's not just the hit to the school budgets as well. About 2 years ago, I took our then president of the association back for the National Forest Counties and Schools Coalition Conference, where I spent some quality time with members of the New York congressional delegation talking about this issue. And my board chair, his lead was not the impact of schools, but the partnership with the counties that all of our school districts have. You know, you have to have good roads to get kids to schools and safe communities so kids can be effective learners and good, solid community participants. So we just second the chorus you've heard here today, and very happy to see HJM 100 going through the system, and we stand at the ready to go back at when needed to D.C. to talk to our congressional delegation as well.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, maybe a couple more comments. that's assuming that the $100 million price tag on the second half of kindergarten is accurate, which I doubt. That's one comment. Another comment, Clinton did hold a forest summit, but he also promised 2 billion board feet a year, and he has fallen way short of that. But just one of the other impacts of this, and you know, I made the comment that Curry County couldn't afford pencils, and maybe it is ink, but a couple dynamics happened here, because several counties went out for some sort of tax base a year ago under the assumption that the payments were going to stop. And they basically said, give us this tax base or the world will come to an end. They didn't get their tax base, and it was reauthorized, so the world didn't come to an end. So it's a further erosion of the trust in the people and what government has to say about things, which is a huge issue. But the reality is, we have probably two counties that will almost initially go into default, and one of them is Curry. And then the dominoes start falling at that point, because the first option on the table is for adjoining counties to pick up pieces of the county that went into default. In the case of Curry, it would be Josephine and Coos. And guess what? If Josephine and Coos picked up Curry, they would be in default. Okay? So there's a huge domino effect, and so they will be reluctant, if at all, to pick up those pieces. And if that doesn't happen, then it falls to the Secretary of State to redraw county lines, which would be an interesting dynamic, to say the least. The potential impact here is probably larger than any of us have really even imagined, if indeed these payments stop. I mean, we redefine the state of Oregon at that point in time. And I'm not sure we're quite ready to do that. So, I represent Curry County. I like Curry County. I want it to stay Curry County. And so we need to do everything we can to ensure that that does happen.
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, there's one other option. They can all turn their services back over to the state. And that's not a good option either.
But that leads into a whole other discussion I will not have right now. So,
but I say, no, you're absolutely right.
Right.
There are scenarios as those dominoes fall that none of them are good scenarios.
Yeah, but even if they return back to the state, the services they are doing for the state, more or less, they still couldn't maintain their functions that they do as a county.
You're
so.
Right.
Well, at one time, Coos County was labeled the timber capital of the world. And then in the 80s, it became the most depressed county in the state. And then I visited Coquille recently, and I was sitting in a bakery, and I heard this wonderful whistle. And it sounded like an old whistle of a workplace. And so I asked the mayor who I was visiting what that whistle was, and he said, it's the old mill whistle. There used to be two mills in Coquille, now there's only one. And he said the town had grown so used to hearing the whistle blow, and it blew in the morning, and it blew at noon, and it blew when the day was done. That they took the whistle from the mill and they put it downtown in one of their buildings, I think the fire station or someplace, and so it blows every day. 3 times a day, and that's all they have as a reminder of their community being a timber community.
Well, so. And one of the biggest mills in Coos Bay is now a casino.
Yes, I would agree with that. All right, well, thank you very much. I will close the public hearing on HJM 100, open a work session. Senator Cruz.
Madam Chair, I move HJM 100 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Be adopted,
yep.
That's a funny. I've never heard that before.
Correct.
Okay, Senator Cruz moves HJM 100 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any further discussion about that?
I think I've said all I need to.
Yeah, I'm not going to give you this bill to carry. You've already said enough. All right, any objection? Hearing none. Well, let's just take the roll just because I like hearing that. Give you something to do over there.
Senator Hatch.
Aye.
Senator
Metzger. Aye.
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 Aye. HJM 100 is off to the floor. And, you know, I carried that resolution last session. Senator Morris, because your commissioner came and testified, could you carry that one?
Certainly. Thank you.
Even though you're a little more flush than some of the other counties.
Well, I also represent Linn County.
Oh, that's true, which is not so
very timber-related county.
That's right. I forget some of you who represent more than one county. Okay, great. Thank you. I've closed the work session on HGM 100. Now, Boss, where are we going? Okay. Let's go with the House Bill 3608. I'll open a public hearing.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3608A directs the governor on behalf of Oregon to participate in the Pacific Northwest Emergency Management Arrangement, which will be referred to as PNEMA, entered into by the states of Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and Alaska, the province of British Columbia, and the Yukon government. It incorporates PNEMA and its annexes into statute. It declares emergency and will take effect upon passage.
Okay, do I have a sign-up sheet? I know Paul Evans with the governor's office is here to testify. So
and Ken Murphy.
And Ken Murphy? Okay, cool. Come on up, guys. And that's it. Okay. Choose who goes first. State your name for the record.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ken Murphy. I'm the Director of Oregon Emergency Management. House Bill 3608 is an international assistance compact, and the language in this House bill simply authorizes the implementing procedures. This compact goes back as far as 1996, signed by Governor Kitzhaber, and then re-signed in 2006, and this particular piece implements a mutual aid agreement very similar to the Emergency Management Assistance Compact signed on by Oregon in 2001 with all the rest of the U.S. states. And the only real change to this is it's adding the province of British Columbia and the Yukon government to this mutual aid agreement. And we feel that this is good pre-planning, good policy to set into motion those type of things that we can set up between the two governments to share resources in case of a disaster. And I might also note that Congress ratified this agreement many years ago and recognizes it as a legal document and a good authorized purpose for sharing mutual aid. So, and this is also will help us be better prepared for the 2010 Olympics if something bad would happen. So that's all I have, Madam
okay,
Chair.
Okay, so Congress authorized this as a legal document, but the individual states and territories have to sign on to it, correct?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay, great. Thank you. Mr. Evans.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, my name is Paul Evans. I'm the governor's policy advisor for emergency preparedness. Real quickly, this is one of those documents that you need to have done so when bad things happen, it's covered and you can get the help you need. As we've learned this past year with the floods in Vernonia and across the northwest coast and the fires down in California and other issues across the country, you never know when you're going to need assistance. This is just one more tool that we can have in the toolkit. So we appreciate your support on this.
Okay. Any questions? Senator Cruz.
Yeah. I stay during this fun experiment we're doing. I stay out of Comfort Suites, and I've noticed there was for 2 weeks there was a lot of FEMA folks there. What are they doing?
Madam Chair, Senator Cruz, currently most hotels or motels in Salem are filled by FEMA folks in support of the Northwest floods of December. And they're here in their role standing up the Joint Field Office and providing services to the to the citizens and businesses of all the counties that suffered in the December flooding event and windstorm event.
Okay. So that's all the surveying, and I know that they're advising communities on heights of structure and different things like that. So they're just
absolutely
they're just deploying from here on a daily basis to go do the work then.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
So they don't put them in trailers?
No, ma'am.
No. FEMA ran out of trailers, I think.
Yeah, they gave them to all the people who got flooded out in New Orleans. Okay, that was my little side comment. Any questions from the committee? Okay, I don't think we have any trouble with this one. Thank you very
much. Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3608 and open a work session.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3608A engrossed to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3608A be engrossed, be moved to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Hearing none. Take the roll, please.
Senator
Hatch.
Aye.
Senator
Morris.
Aye.
Senator Moore.
Aye.
Vice President. Aye. House Bill 3608A passes to the floor. Let's see. We'll go right to left. Senator Metzger, you want to carry that one?
Sure.
Okay. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3608A and open a public hearing on HCR 100, honoring this wonderful woman who's no longer here. I just love this woman. Ms. Richardson?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 100 memorializes Martha Ann Dow.
Okay. Do we have someone here to testify for Ms. Dow? Valerie Lane. And thank you. Marcia Kelly. Oh, we've got a whole bunch of people. So, Valerie, why don't you do your thing? And since you come from OIT, you came all the way from Klamath?
Yes, ma'am. I'm Chair Walker, members of the committee. My name is Valerie Lane. I'm the OIT Director of Public Relations. It was my pleasure to work directly for Martha Ann for 2 years and knew her personally, yes, ma'am, for over a decade. If Martha Ann were in this chamber today, she would say that this memorial was not nearly as important as the work that you're doing on these other issues. She had a great heart for the work that each of you do. When she was an undergraduate, her mentor's spouse was actually a member of the Montana State Legislature. She learned early the importance of the elected process and had nothing but the greatest of respect for things as they happened in the state of Oregon. We unfortunately lost her in September, and what we didn't know is this time last year she was actually struggling with stage 4 cancer, but she pushed through because she was working so diligently towards the completion of the Oregon Center for Health Professions. She was a woman who saw herself as a partner to all and would shrug the responsibility that we've given her in death for being a role model and a visionary leader who will take us into the next 50 to 60 years at Oregon Institute of Technology. I appreciate you greatly taking the opportunity to recognize her. This is so meaningful to each of us who knew her and her professional duties, but also to her family. Her family was so moved last week when this was passed on the House floor, for she didn't talk about work at home, and they had no idea of the great work that she was doing and the very influential people that she truly knew on a first-name basis. And so I thank you so much for taking this opportunity to honor and acknowledge my liege, Martha Ann Dow.
Thank you, Ms. Lane. I want to tell you that this came to me in my mail, right there in my P.O. box, and I read it from cover to cover, and I was home this week. I only go home on the weekends, and it was by my bed where I had read every page of it, and so I brought it today because I knew this was coming, and then there was another one waiting for me when I got to the Capitol. I loved reading about Martha Ann. I love that woman. She came to see me every session. She would always come visit me in my office and talk to me about all the wonderful things that, that were happening at OIT. And I've been going to Klamath Falls for a quarter of a century now, every couple of months with the court. We travel down there, and so it's sort of like my second home. And she was the strongest advocate for you here in this legislature. And such a wonderful family person, and I just want to thank you so much for providing this to me and all the members, because we really got to know more about Martha Ann Dow than I had ever known, and it was really comforting to read about her.
Thank you, Chair Walker. Martha Ann spoke so highly of each and every one of you. She was the kind of person that would ask you more about yourself than tell you about herself. And so this document truly serves, I believe, as a testament to the wonderful human being that we've lost.
Thank you. Any other questions? Well, thanks for traveling up here from Klamath. If I was not here, I would have been with my judge there last week. So I do miss it, and I'm running out of scones. I get my scones from the bakery there, the Swan Bakery. I just love Klamath Falls. So thanks so much for coming. We've got some other folks here who want to say some wonderful things about Martha Ann. Marcia Kelly, Mary Bodkin, and Amy Wilson. They're gone? They signed up on the wrong sheet? Okay. Well, I know if they were here, they'd say great things.
Hi. Hi. Chair Walker and members of the committee. My name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm on the Public Policy Committee and Lobby Corps for the American Association of University Women, and we're very proudly here supporting this memorial for Dr. Martha Ann Dow. Not only was Martha president of OIT, she was also a member of the American Association of University Women. In Montana, she was very active and served as her branch president. When she got to OIT, she took OIT into the corporate membership of American Association of University Women. We have 2,000 members in the state, and you can be either an individual member, a member at large, or a corporate member, which is for colleges and universities and community colleges. And Martha Ann encouraged her faculty members to participate in AUW. With the Klamath Falls branch of AUW, OIT co-sponsored a transitions conference 3 times. And these conferences are designed for women who are investigating going back to school to provide better educational foundation for themselves so that they can provide for themselves and their families. She was also very instrumental in supporting the location of the AUW State Convention. We held it at OIT about 4 years ago, and it was a lovely campus, and it was good to see all of those things that happened there. When I saw that this was going to be on the agenda, actually over on the House side, I contacted one of our members who is a faculty member at OIT and an AUW member in Klamath Falls, and this is what she said about Dr. Dow. She was always so proud of AUW and our mission. It's really hard to put in words all that she meant to me and the difference that she made in my career and life. Martha also supported the creation of a Women's Resource Center at OIT, and was very supportive of anything that would advance the careers of women and men. And, of course, you have everything that is in the brochure from OIT. Sherry Yang, who's the member who shared the importance of Dr. Dow in her career with me, also shared that last month the Oregon Women in Higher Education honored the life of Martha Ann Dow with their service award in appreciation of the efforts that she made to support women in higher education. And that, of course, is part of AUW's cause, advocacy, education, and research. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Kelly. Any questions or comments? I think we've lost a great friend and colleague and co-worker and advocate, but Martha Ann Dow lives on in our hearts and in all the great work she's done. So I'm really glad you came and shared that with us about the American Association of University Women.
Well, I remember seeing her in the halls part of the time, and oftentimes she had groups of students with her advocating as well. So we did lose a very, very distinguished woman.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing. Oops, I'm not going to close it just yet. I'm going to unclose it.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. This is a wonderful tribute to a very, very fine lady who had a huge impact at OIT. And I didn't want to let this opportunity pass, but I want to say it very tactfully. This memorial will have much greater meaning if we will discharge the balance of our obligation to OIT, to finish funding the Martha Ann Dow Center for Health Professions. So I do want to raise that consciousness, at least with the body, that we do have that obligation, and it will make this memorial a very meaningful one. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Morse. I was actually going to raise that when we had discussion about this, because you're exactly right. We have an obligation, and we need to own up to it.
Thank you.
So thank you for sharing that. Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on HCR 100 and open a work session.
Madam Chair, before I make the motion, what Senator Morse said, what you were going to say, I echo. So, and having said that, I move HCR 100 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves HCR 100 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any further discussion? Thank you for pointing that out. We've got how many days left? 3-4 days left to get the funding piece done. I think Ways and Means closes on Thursday, so
maybe.
I'm hoping that they do that. I had hoped to get down for the grand opening, and I got stuck in Medford in court with the judge. We were on our way from Medford to Klamath Falls, and I got stuck because the trial went late, so I missed it. But I enjoyed reading about it in this booklet, and I hope that our colleagues... such a pretty picture. I hope our colleagues get a copy of this booklet. So with that, why don't you go ahead and take the roll?
Aye.
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 Aye. HCR 100 has been adopted and will go to the floor. And I'm going to ask Senator Whitsitt to carry that because he represents your community, Ms. Lane. And again, thank you for traveling all the way here. Okay, we'll close the work session on HCR 100. And that's it, other than you need me to announce. We're holding over 3600 to... well, let's just carry it over till Wednesday. That'll give me time to get an amendment if I need one. But if it becomes impractical to do what I need to do, we will move the bill. So with that being said, anyone else have anything for the good of the order? Then we're adjourned. Thank you.